Welcome to Everyday Sublime. This is your host, Josh Summers, and Happy New Year. Welcome back. It's been about a month that the podcast, myself, Terry, have been on Sangha recess, and we're starting up our new year. And in this talk, this opening talk that I shared on January 15th of 2024, I pick up on a metaphor that is in many ways central to the Buddha's teachings. It's sort of a metaphor for the practice of awakening, where the Buddha compares our life to being one that is flooded, that is overwhelmed by various floods. And the practice itself is like the construction and use of a raft to carry us to another shore, to a shore of sanity, safety, freedom, liberation. And what I want to mention here in the intro is that for this year, for 2024, one of the main practice threads that I'll be emphasizing in the Sangha classes, particularly in our Monday Dharma sessions, is an explorative cultivation of what are called the perfections, the divine heart perfections, or the paramis in Pali. These are the heart qualities that can ripen and be nurtured within our practice, that as the author of a book I'll be sharing, as Ajahn Sucitto suggests, these heart qualities are what allow us to cross the floods of life, or to traverse the floods of life. So check out in the show notes, there's going to be a link for Ajahn Sucitto's book called Parami, Ways of Crossing the Floods. And this is going to be a companion text that I'll be drawing from and throughout the year. And I encourage you to check into it too. It might be a good companion for your own practice. But we'll be discussing themes from this book in our Monday Sangha sessions. And then on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, Terry and I will continue to teach our embodied forms of meditation with yin yoga, yang yoga, and qigong. And I've really enjoyed getting back to those classes this week. I taught what I would consider a very delicious spinal flow class today, emphasizing or leading to the recognition of resting and stillness. So we're looking forward to being back, and I have to say also that, and you can probably hear the quavering in my voice, this year is looking like a real challenge. The war between Israel and Hamas and the genocide levels of death and infanticide that we're seeing is just ghastly and something that I thought I'd never really see in my lifetime. And so there's just still a level of shock that I'm weathering as I try to get my head around what's going on. But of course, that conflagration in the Middle East is just a newer conflagration amidst many and amidst others that are brewing. And I get into that in a little bit in this talk, not a lot, but just try to have that in the context of what we're all going to be facing and likely are facing now. So I'm very happy to be back and look forward to sharing more episodes with you. I'll just say that last fall, I had a long series of conversations with many senior insight meditation teachers, and I still have about four or five of those interviews that I have not released. So those will be coming soon. I'm excited to have an ongoing series this year with Miles Schertz, who was a guest from last fall. We really hit it off and realized we have a lot of topics to unpack together. Miles is an insight meditation teacher as well as a communication counselor or a communication coach. And I've found his articulation of the Dharma and expression of engaging with the Dharma really refreshing, and I think we're going to have a great series, which I'm, again, looking forward to. But all of that to say, we're heading, I don't think there's any way of denying that we are all heading into choppy water. more choppy water. I just want to say, as we start this year again, or start a new year together, thank you for your support. To all the members of the Riverbird Sangha, from our heart, so thank you. We really thank you for your help and support, and your practice. And it's a real honor to be able to serve and share our love of the teaching and our love of meditation and yin yoga and qigong with you. So here's to 2024. We're in this together in solidarity. Keep practicing. I hope you enjoy today's episode. And if you do enjoy the podcast, please share with a friend. And if you're curious about the Sangha, do check out joining. There's a link for you in the show notes. We offer 2 weeks of free classes with us. There's no big commitment up front. You can check us out, see what you think. But we are a very low-key but sincere group of practitioners and teachers dedicated to the arts of cultivating the mind, yin yoga, qigong, yang yoga, how they all integrate and work together. So we look forward to practicing with you soon. And without further ado, here's today's episode, Crossing the Floods. Today, what I hope to do is just offer a few reflections around maybe the tone and direction that I'm aiming at or looking at as we look into this year together. And part of having time off, and I know we've taken Sangha recesses before, but I would like to share that in the 3 years that we've formed, this was the first time that Terry and I were both able to really step away from work related to the Sangha. So on this recess, we didn't work on the newsletter. We didn't do things with the podcast. We didn't teach classes. Of course, we still had things related to our families and chores around the house and looking after this and that. But the recess gave us a much needed period of time to focus on our own practice and to dive into that. And in having that time, one theme, one very pronounced theme kept coming back again and again to me in various forms. And it's a theme that, as I think you'll appreciate, is central to a Buddhist understanding of the path of the Dharma and the potential that comes, or that it's available through applying the practice path in one's own life. But it's a theme that really impressed itself upon both of us, I'm sure many of you, regarding, on one level, and this is a multi-leveled, multi-dimensional theme, but on one level, the theme came through just experiencing climactic weather. And so the theme is flooding, the theme of flooding. And I know in various parts of the United States, for several weeks now, there have been big weather systems moving through, bringing all sorts of very challenging weather conditions. And locally, where we live in Maine, particularly on the coastal sides of Maine, these weather systems have brought flooding, erosion, destruction to property. Rivers have flooded. And very locally on our own property, as I've shared in the past, when there's threats of flooding, I get extremely anxious about what would happen if our driveway floods? Because if you don't know this, we have a dirt 800-foot driveway from the road that comes into our house, and in the middle of it, the driveway dips down by a pond, and this pond is probably 20 feet wide, 40 feet in length, and about a foot deep. So it's a very shallow, small pond. But in two of these storms, in two of these recent storms, the pond swelled in size by about 3 to 4 times its normal size. So significant parts of our yard were suddenly filled with water. And we've tried to estimate how high the water rose, and we estimate that it rose about 3 to 4 feet at least. And on two of these major storms, the water was literally within an inch of going over the lip of the driveway and then flowing over the driveway and potentially washing out sort of our connection to the world. Our ability to go out and get things we need would be washed away. Now, the good news is our driveway held. And so in that regard, I consider us the lucky ones. We're the lucky ones that didn't have dramatic destruction. And there's just evidence in the news, wherever we look, that there are many people that aren't as fortunate, aren't as lucky. And so while we were experiencing and literally weathering these storms, in my own way, I was trying to practice as much as I could, meaning reading, sitting, journaling, walking, practicing, trying to bring a level of attention, a fine-tuned level of attention to my moment-to-moment experience. And during the storms, while the storms were occurring, I was poignantly made aware of how unpleasant my inner weather was in response to the outer weather, that there was a simmering, boiling at times degree of fear, dread, anxiety, helplessness, feeling what can I do other than wait and see? And in between sittings and little breaks here or there, I would put on my boots and my jacket and hustle out to the spot in the driveway to assess things and look at what was happening, as though that would make me feel better. And to a certain degree, knowing that the water hadn't gone over, I would always feel, okay, well, at least that hasn't happened yet. But the weather is, let me pause there and just say that in my meditation, when I would meditate through these phases of the break, a phrase or a metaphor from the Buddha's own teachings kept coming to me, in which the Buddha is said to have described the outcome of practice. He's described the realization of the heart of the Dharma. He describes it as crossing the floods. Crossing the floods. That the Dharma is a vehicle, sometimes compared to a raft, and practice would be ways of building and paddling that raft to carry one from one shore to the other. So from the near shore that is experiencing the floods to the far shore that's safe, that's on safe ground. And as I would sit I reconnected with that metaphor because it felt so accurate to my experience. And this was, you know, this was really, again, one of the first recesses where Terry and I had more ongoing time to go into our practice more deeply. And so there was it wasn't quite as formal as a retreat center retreat. Like if I were to go to the Insight Meditation Society where you sit for 8 hours a day, it wasn't that intense. But with added work of, you know, just doing chores and being mindful of doing while doing chores and then having more time to sit, it's easy to imagine that that's some sort of idyllic condition in which the mind will seize the opportunity to rest into its own inherent stillness. like that if someone goes on retreat, that wow, they unplug, they disconnect from all the agitating things of the world, and they just nestle into a kind of a beautiful nest of stillness and tranquility and quietude. And while that certainly may occur at times, getting there isn't so easy, and the path in inevitably brings me to encounter the full brunt or the full force of currents in my being that I may not be fully conscious of when I'm just moving around in my normal life. And so sitting down and just endeavoring to pay attention, to watch the mind, to study the mind, brought me a renewed appreciation of the floods within. And that question of facing these floods, and I'll kind of name what I think, what I'm receiving as categories of these different floods, but in approaching it this way, I think it, this metaphor has brought to life a palpable experience of relating to the teachings in a new and fresh way for me. A few days ago, I was just searching around online for quotes and things related to what the Buddha had to say about the floods. And that brought me, it brought up a book, an online book by the British Thai monastic Ajahn Sachito. And if you stay tuned for the newsletter this week, I'm going to put in a link to that book, and I'll explain a little bit more of why I'm suggesting, if you're interested, you can check that book out. But Ajahn Sachito, who is a teacher that I feel fortunate to have worked with on some retreats, had the good fortune of being able to transport him from point A's to point B's at times. He's a teacher that two podcast guests from last fall also have studied with quite intensely. And Sachito's book is a series of reflections and teachings on working with qualities of the heart that are sometimes referred to as the perfections. They're the divine perfections of the heart, qualities that ripen with practice. That, in his words, are ways, these qualities and cultivations are ways of crossing the floods. It's not, as he says, it's not, the Dharma isn't a technique. It's not one technique. It's a collection of ways of recognizing and learning to navigate the floods of life. And the reason why this metaphor has become captivating to me is that as I read the introduction to Sachito's book, he outlines the way that the Buddha spoke about these floods, the different categorizations of these floods. And as soon as I read them, I said, yes, this is just describing what my last 2 weeks of practice have been like. So this is coming towards the end of my retreat. I read this list and I thought that just perfectly describes the assault of what I've been experiencing. And so the first flood mentioned by the Buddha is the flood of sensual pleasure, or the flood of sensual desire. And this speaks to, you know, whenever I would hear that phrase, sensual desire, you know, it tends to immediately suggest some kind of sexual impulse or sexual energy, or, you know, a sensory pleasure like to do with that's wrapped up in food or a substance. But the phrase in terms of a practice really is far more encompassing, and it's far more ordinary, in that when we sit down, at least when I sit down, and check this out in your own experience, but when I sit down, particularly for longer stretches of time and repeated stretches of time, I can see how, you know, while I'm sitting still, my mind is planning more yoga so my body feels more comfortable. Or, I mean, I could go on and on. I've spent years fantasizing about better meditation cushions when I meditate. Like, I've been for a long time, I'm no longer there, but for a long time, I was always looking for the perfect meditation cushion or bench, or the right shawl, or the right support cushion, or the right chair. The cup of tea that I'll have right after a practice. This extra square of chocolate I'll allow myself today for lunch just because I deserve it. The planning. And so there's a way that in just sitting down to observe the mind, as I sat down to observe my mind, the flow of advertisements for ways to seek more sensual experience, a better to get away from something or to get something more pleasant, that was definitely a flood that would appear. And the reason I think the word flood as a metaphor is powerful is that it conveys something that another word that's used often to talk about these themes, it conveys something more than the word attachment. You know, sometimes if you look at the Four Noble Truths or other core teachings of the Buddha, there's reflections on the impact of an attachment. And how do we become non-attached? How do we let go? How do we free ourselves from unnecessary attachments? And that's a fine word. It can maybe serve at times. But the sense of a flood conveys the kind of the disorientation, the panicking, the reaching and grasping in a flailing, frantic way without knowing where you can securely hold on. And as I continue to reflect through Sachito's book, the second form of floods, the second typology of flood that he speaks to is the flood of becoming. And I'm just ticking these off. Well, this is something that I intend to explore in more detail as we work through some of these qualities of heart that are referred to as the perfections or the paramis. But the flood of becoming is a subtle one. It's been subtle for me for a long time. I'd say it was many years in my practice before it even dawned on me that it was the dominant current in my practice. Meaning I was practicing to become a better me. There was a self-improvement campaign. There was, and it's still here, but there was a really unconscious, gnawing sense of inadequacy because I hadn't done enough practice to become worthy of being a better person. And it's a common enough energy, I think, if for anyone that sits down and watches their mind. Forms of planning would, whether it's grocery store planning, packing, ordering your day, the mind moving into a anticipated future, planning around how, if I can just move the needle closer to that, what I'm imagining in the future, then I'll become what I think I need to be. And to our normal self, our normal sense of self, there's like, what's wrong with that? What is wrong with that? Well, what's wrong with that? Like what I learned again, and I say it again, it's like every retreat has been a workshop on confronting this energy, is that it's ultimately hostile to peace. It's inimical to peace. That when the wheel of becoming is spinning, our sense of self is toppling into some abstraction about what it thinks it wants, and feeling, in my case, profound dissatisfaction with that orientation. The two other floods, I'm just going to briefly mention them here, that are described in the Buddha's teachings, are the flood of views. Flood of views. Or you could say views and opinions as a special kind of flood. And it would be impossible for me to do justice to this one right now. But something I noticed again, which is that I had a little more time to read the newspaper this break, catch up or get, a feel for what's going on, what's alive in the world. And I know, I'll be surprised if you're not paying attention to the same things. But it's clear that there's a very disconcerting increase in human conflict with some of the most ghastly forms of violence that I've certainly seen in my lifetime. And in a sense, we're witnessing directly, vicariously, the impact of human violence, human hatred. And as I would sit with these current events, these debates, with these conflicts, I had to see in my own self, and this is wasn't so, it's not comfortable, but I could, I really sat and had some very uncomfortable sittings and phases of days of sitting with my own hatred of hatred. And how bitter and righteous and unpleasant that is to experience, and it, how unpleasant it is to be with. And so I definitely I felt like I got a better sense of what was the Buddha getting at. He said, he described views, that there's a flood of views. And as Sachito says in his book, you know, the Buddha's not subscribing to a view of having no views, because that would be a view itself, a view of not having views. But what seems to be the central movement of the practice is to be able to open to and uncover a clarity of mind, truly an openness of mind, an unfolding of the mind that is able to look into views and see how views function, to see things from multiple views, and to see perhaps how to be able to understand views, their function, how they operate, in light of whether they condition suffering or condition the emergence or the further development of peace. And in many ways, I think conflict of views, conflicts of opinions are intensifying, and they've been intensifying for several years. There's various factors, whether it's smartphones, balkanization of media, the discreditation of media, algorithms on social networks. And we could see these conflicts as floods or fires that are alive. And so as something that is crossed in the course of cultivating the path, this year I want to spend some time looking at how we can both hear other opinions, other views, how we can engage with them without necessarily feeding cycles of conflict that they can engender. And that's a tall order. But the fourth flood that was listed in this book is the flood of ignorance. And Ajahn Sachito described ignorance as kind of the mother of all of these floods. And whenever the word ignorance comes up, it often comes with the question, well, what do we mean by ignorance? And the word can be used to refer to a lack of knowledge or a lack of understanding about any number of things. But in the context of practice, the context of understanding the mind, it seems like the Buddha meant something like ignorance about the nature of suffering. Basically, essentially, ignorance of the Four Noble Truths. not understanding the cause of suffering, not understanding the origin of it, not understanding what gives rise to it, what quells it, failure to understand that is a kind of ignorance that supports the flood of confusion about how to be, who we are, and how we can be. So I'm going to pivot in a moment to a period of sitting practice, and then I will open it up for your reflections. I don't know if you got to hear the interview I had with Oren J. Sofer at the end of last year, but Oren J., as some of you know, was the he was on staff at the Insight Meditation Center over 20 years ago when I went on my first retreat, and he was the staffer who welcomed me to the retreat center and registered me and assigned me my yogi job, and I've had a few times to practice with him, both as yogis and in a work situation in the kitchen with him. And he's someone that I've had a high amount of respect for as a upcoming Dharma leader. And his book, his recent book, Your Heart Was Made for This, which was published at the end of last year, is a collection. I don't know, remember how many, whether it's 50 or 25, but it's a collection of qualities of the heart that he sees as being supportive to a holistic development of oneself, so that the individual is in a sense formed in a way to bring their practice to a level of engagement with the crises of the world. He's trying to really answer this question of what is the relationship between our inner cultivation and the kind of social justice, social action that feels feels essential when the heart wakes up to see the various forms of unnecessary suffering that are afflicting so many. So I encourage you to check. In the newsletter this week, I'm going to put that podcast out again in the newsletter, so you'll see that come into your inbox. If you are interested, I encourage his book. There'll be a link for that. But I'll also be including a link to Ajahn Sucitto's book. And as I say this, I will be drawing from these books throughout the year. And it's not a book club per se, in that it's not a requirement to read. But if you want to read as a supplement to some of the reflections we'll be sharing, or I'll be sharing, I hope that's of help to you. But the themes that Oren J. is asking about is basically, what is the relationship between our practice and environmental collapse, the crisis of the climate? What is the relationship between our practice and what can feel like a societal collapse or a social collapse? And that's what it feels like is happening to me, is that there's a polarization, a balkanization of thinking and view that is bringing, as one of my friends, Bob Wright, said, bringing the United States the closest to civil war that he's seen in his entire lifetime. He's in his 70s now, being a journalist tracking domestic and international dynamics for quite some time. The war in the Middle East, the war in the Ukraine, the threat of war and occupation of Taiwan, people have said this, it feels like 1938, 37, it feels like the 30s, mid-30s in many ways. And it's staggering to think of everything that's at stake in 2024, this year. So part of the societal break that has been a theme that I've tried to address from time to time is the impact of, at least in the United States, of racialization as a particularly toxic and incredibly painful condition of social breakdown of a humanitarian breakdown. And knowing today is in the United States is the holiday that remembers the life and legacy of the civil rights activist and preacher Martin Luther King Jr. I knew I wouldn't be able to do justice to King or to that question today. But it is part of the question of how does a society heal? How do individual members of a society heal? How do structures in societies heal? How do we heal, particularly when industrial forms of trauma are raging? So those are my early reflections for this year. Questions, and particularly in light of the metaphor of floods. Because I think that word, it just encapsulates what I'm experiencing, what I'm seeing. And intensive practice always has affirmed my confidence in the sanity and balance of the Dharma itself. Because while I can describe to you, yes, how horrible and unpleasant it was to experience sensual desire and the floods of hatred and various views and just being swept away by the currents of my mind, the Dharma does point one to the opposite shore. That there is a shore of safety, there's a shore of freedom that can be experienced, can be known, can be realized in any given moment. And I won't share it now, but there's a sutta I found where the Buddha was in dialogue with an interlocutor, asking the Buddha, how did you cross the floods? How did he cross? And I'm going to leave that question open for now, but Ajahn Sucitto said in his book, suggests that the most important quality of the heart, like the foundational quality that allows all the other wholesome qualities of the heart to emerge and grow. But the foundational quality is one of heedfulness, being heedful, as opposed to being heedless. And so that's a question I've been holding in my own practice. What is it? How does it work? What does being heedful mean? And it invites a certain quality. Now listen to what happens when I say the word. Invites a certain quality of vigilance, of tracking what's going on, of not slouching back into a kind of casual or lazy posture. Some people have suggested that the Buddha's dying words were essentially, don't be lazy, when he said, be heedful. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. And so sitting, again, when I get swept by floods, I know that I'm suddenly in a mode of heedlessness. I'm not aware that I'm lost. I'm carried away. And so the antidote to heedlessness might conjure a sense of having to be like a guard with, you know, standing firm and highly caffeinated, guarding what's happening. I want to suggest a slightly softer orientation to being heedful. And that suggestion to take into practice is just one of questioning. Just reminding yourself to question what's happening. So that in being mindful and being awake, we're not tightly holding to a fixed view of what to be aware of, or not holding to a tight view about what should be happening or what shouldn't be happening. But we're actually, as in a Rilkean sense, literally living the question, what am I awake to? What am I aware of? Where am I? How am I? So I just want to let those questions lead us into a sitting. Okay, thanks so much for listening today. I hope you enjoyed the talk. And again, if you enjoyed the podcast or any other episode, please feel free to share these with your friends or share them around social media. If you would like support in your practice, do consider joining the Riverbird Sangha. We are, again, a very inclusive, open, non-dogmatic approach to awakening the heart and mind through the disciplines of meditation, yin yoga, yang yoga, and qigong. And we have a very rich practice group in the Sangha. And it's just a wonderful place to get inspiration for your own practice. We get inspiration from members, they get inspiration from us. It's a symbiotic relationship of benefit to each. It's just a fun place to practice. So we look forward to practicing with you this year. And again, we acknowledge that we're all holding quite a lot right now. So wherever you are, whatever you're holding, may the Dharma be of refuge, may practice be a refuge. May your own heart awareness bloom and meet the moment with the virtues of grace and wisdom and compassion. That's sort of my prayer for the year. May we practice and meet these conditions that we're all shivering and rattling with. May we meet these conditions with wisdom and compassion. So I look forward to practicing with you. I look forward to connecting again. Until the next episode, stay safe, stay strong, and keep practicing. All my best.